Hi, folks.
Stop!
Seventy years ago, the camps were freed, and I was watching a documentary by Claude Lanzmann called The Shoah, and it prompted me to write this, The Shoah. How can I commemorate the Shoah? With Adorno's words ringing in my ears, there can be no poetry after Auschwitz. Do I say silent and refuse to write? Since nothing can evoke the agony of those caught up in that benighted time. Perhaps if I recite the well-known camps where gypsies, Jews, and those too weak to work were herded out from cattle trucks to die. Dachau, Bergen-Belsen, and Buchenwald. The gas chambers of Auschwitz-Birkenau, tall chimneys of Belzec and Treblinka. Some consolation, if I might pretend that such a thing could only happen once, an aberration no one could repeat. A foolish notion, since in 94 machetes showed Rwanda's special brand of tribal ethnic cleansing to the world. Swamped by the banality of evil, how can I salvage my humanity, drag myself away from its contagion? Perhaps it's best to ask what I would do if given orders to bulldoze bodies to an open pit, bury them alive. If my refusal meant that I'd be shot, I'd like to think my choice would be to die. But what if it were I who held the gun?
One night I bring a Luger as a prop. Robert Galvin.
Inhale, exhale. Inhale, exhale. Pale as cotton, just as soft, still besotted my face on a veil. I hefted her aloft. She wouldn't feel a thing. Tonight, the path of lust lays unbarred before me. And lust, when unleashed, can be quite the beast.
Shane Vaughan.
Forgive me, I'm going to try and do this one off the top of my head. Not off the top of my head, but from the brain. In honor of Valentine's Day, or as I like to call it, go fuck yourself, dear. It's called I Will Not Use the Word Love. I will not use the word love in this poem or any other. I will not use love to describe you, not you, nor I, nor us love. I will not say that I loved you, as you never said, I love you. I will not make this about us, love. I will not make this about you.
Thank you. I also hate Valentine's Day. Janice Mindle.
Janice
Mindle, please.
Thank you very much for having us as guests. This is called How to Make a Dress Out of Silence. Take a yard of the quiet of the dawn before the birds wake. Lose the sudden hush before a truth is spoken, and breathless pause in the eye of a storm to create a template for your bodice. Be sure to calculate the volume of the air held in place by the lungs' alveoli, so that it stretches easily across the depth and breadth of your chest. Cut out a skirt from a length of the boundless, soundless vacuum of space. Now, thread a hiatus with a sense of absence, and so into one piece. Listen.
Your precious time for a moment or two. Your service provider is currently who? Our latest rendition, because of attrition, we're in a position to offer 3 minutes and modems to you, and channels as clear as a didgeridoo. Cortex. But it must run. We can't withdraw the course. It's expected, and enrollments are up. They've got a foot in the door. It's on the prospectus, subject to demand. A run on class materials. Rubbish. We'd be sued without a leg to stand on. Hand clapping and footstool step-ups and pencils were good enough once. Now we must put them all through their paces. We know the new floor permits only soft soles. There's a footnote here about that. But think of the cost if you were a parent of centipede twins. Who'd foot the bill? The board chairman will hear about this, I say. He's a weekly pedicure, well known for his stance on PE and ability to think on his feet. Furthermore, his wife is a podiatrist, chief observer for the three-legged race, and founding chair of the Alumni Association of Millipedes.
Donald Dempsey.
Thank you. This is called Singing the River. Walking with my uncle was never the ordinary process of perambulation in order to get from point A to point C. We would sing our way into the field as if to tame it, soothe it with sound. And carried down, the heat is brown. We'd sing to it, the clouds are dark or ardently, the grass listening with its thousand ears. And the field would swoon and fall down to the river at its border, which, as it happened, was the real-life river of the song, to kiss the slumbering Ogilvy, as if he had sung it into existence. And we would roll ourselves down over and over until we arrived at its dizzy waters, dangling our toes in pure song. And now, with a quick uncle wink, let's walk home backwards. And backwards home we'd go, just for the laugh of it, the yes of it. Confusing cows and a few scattered clouds, trees and hedges tiptoeing away from us, the five-bar gate with the sweetest, wildest strawberries at its feet, proclaiming is it Maduar or what? And the next day, off we'd go, walking eyes closed, in the darkness of our own making, to sing its song to the river chuckling over stones to itself. And the next day would be backwards with eyes closed, led along by our own laughter and the odd mystified moon. Farewell, we tell the sleepy river. Farewell, leaving it dreaming in the sunset. Shh, shushed our footsteps, shushes walking backwards. When Donald swore, Ior, Ior, he'd part no more. A storm would cree, shh.
Thanks, Donald. Joe Sweeney.
Very much. I'm just going to read a short extract from an essay from this humorous essay, and it's a section called Never Say Die, and it's about age. My dear friends, I do hope you each find your true age soon. I wish you well in your search. Just remember, we are all unique and everyone's search is personal. Not everyone will find they are 23 like me. However, as the good book says, knock and the door will be opened, seek and ye shall find. I would suggest you confine your search to somewhere in the 20s, as anything after that can get you into uncertain territory. Let's face it, life can sometimes go a bit mouldy after you've hit 30 or 40. On the other hand, don't drop too low. 13 could bring puberty back. and younger than 13, and you could find yourself being beaten up by school children again. You'll know you've chosen the right age because almost immediately you'll feel much better. You'll snuggle right down into it like a rabbit into a burrow. Great benefits follow the discovery of your true age. Certainly, I have found, personally, that my health has remained excellent since that fateful day when I discovered my real age. I've had little or no variation for decades. I find I'm avoiding all those illnesses that afflict older people. If I awake some morning with a pain, and imagine for a moment it might be arthritis or gout, I sit bolt upright in the bed and declare, no, I am imagining it, it is not possible, I'm only 23. I don't pay strange pains any notice. I simply haul myself up, hobble down the stairs, and ring someone from the Hill Walking Club to find when the next outing is. Now, once you have your correct age in place, you'll be up for anything. You could go for a jog or a cycle down the motorway. You can dance along the flyover with arms outstretched. You can even do parachute jumps. You will feel good about yourself. You will feel right at home in the jungle of life. Lions and rhinoceroses, gorillas and snakes may come at you, disguised as mothers-in-law, nephews, relatives of all kinds, and even doctors telling you you're this age and that age and really must be careful. Ignore them. Smile nonchalantly. Push back your hat, light your cigar, have a swig from the whiskey bottle, cock your rifle, and continue your trek across life's Serengeti. Your hair may turn ghostly white and disappear. Your teeth may fall out. You may have to squint to see the time and the racing fixtures. You may have to get reading glasses, hearing aids, dentures, hip replacements, wooden legs, wigs, and all kinds of implants. But you must ignore such developments. You must listen only for the horns of Elfland faintly blowing, for the music in your heart. And even if you have to give up dancing on parapets or abandon vigorous sex with four different partners a night, at least at the same time, you can at least sit quietly in an armchair, happy and content that you are still your own inexorable self. You are still young. You can still look forward to tomorrow. And you can even face up to death. You may even find the courage to prepare your epitaph. I have. My current effort is. Here lies the body of yours so truly. A man of his age. His own, you see. He lived with integrity for over a century. Yet, when he died, he was 23.
Thanks, Joe. I thought you were gardening age. Terry Murray.
Thank you. I'll read two poems. One is might be a bit long, but if you have a bell or a gong, there, stop me. This is the title poem for my new collection, which should be out in the next 6 weeks or 2 months. It's called Under a Linnet's Wing. There was a lane at the side of the cinema, tracked, pitted, and full of holes. One day in late autumn, I walked among the slippery stones. The young man in front turned around. How are you? He called. I'll be down that way. I looked behind, sure that there was someone else. But he waited for me to catch up at the open mouth of the gate. I knew who he was. Grey duffel, the long boned aesthetic face, and American style sneakers. We all knew who he was. Young white atoms clustering around a numinous black star. What have you been up to? As if we continued the conversation from a minute before, reading a bit, I mumbled. How could I tell him of Christina Rossetti, Pablo Neruda, Langston Hughes, not to mention my own little tries at rhyme. Doing a bit of jamming myself, trying to write the songs, stringing together the few words. So confident, tone so rich and full of life. I was content to be there and listen for a while. At the far gate we parted. See ya, he said, with a smile and a wave of his hand. It had started to rain again. He pulled up the woolen hood of his coat and broke into a run, scattering speckles of silver along the length of Windmill Road. Years later, I saw him on Grafton Street, me chasing unruly children and weighed down with shopping bags. But he stopped for a moment and winked, and I like to think that he remembered the time he escorted a shy, tongue-tied girl across the path in the park. One day, maybe soon, we go home to Crumlin, if just for a rainy afternoon, and he will be singing, and the boys will be back in town. Thank you. This is called Field Marshals. It's written by my friend Marion Cody. When only the mongers were still calling it a great war, women left babies, girls left laundries, factories and shops, to gather acres of sphagnum moss and bog cotton, as dry and unruly as streels of a banshee's hair at nightfall. An ancient standing army of oak, ash and alder, hacked down and petrified at the men near the casualty clearing station in Poperinge, Belgium, after a battle had heaped, where my grandfather, an orderly with the Royal Army Medical Corps, armed only with an oil lamp or a pole from a stretcher, watched the surgeons assess the jobs for scalpel or saw. Did he wonder then how a single foot, flesh reaped from muscles and rotting from gas gangrene, might recall sinking the haft of a lie while cutting sods of turf in summer, or bathed in small, cool pools with a skim of peat. As he unraveled the bandages from the reels, woven from cotton and moss, did he hold the strip close to his nose? Did they still smell of the fields around Kinnegad, Rathdowney or Tullamore? Did they still smell of the Midlands, of meadow sweet and home? Thank you.
Thank you, John. This poem was about the limits of human endeavour, and the title of it comes from a publication called The Sunday Sport. It's kind of one of these dubious supermarket tabloids. It's called Double Decker Bus Found on Moon. Darkness descending, the satellite reveals the scars from incessant research. We have more moons to investigate, finding water on planets unheard. Who landed first? Is it you or I? Did we dispose of our knowledge so readily? Into far lights coexisting sharp, like a sheltering constellation branches blaze itself. Space cowboys we are, despite ourselves. The strange geology rings true. What else would we find there apart from rocks, which we analyse to death for want of proof? An evolutionary dead end, we are but maggot food, despite our efforts at immortality. The suicide Jean will force herself into exile for her own pulchritudinous research. Public transport advances in distance and acceleration. Maybe one day they make it a ride. Hungry for endeavor, if not in the atmosphere, the schizophrenic Jean's fantasies bring true. We got there before you, Dick, exclaim. That's why the bus was late. Its terminus is out of this world. Not able to start. A refill of diesel is unlikely. A torrent of truth among her own absence. Home satellite turned to blood, a fiery ball. Joint disposability, grey as ash. Space is the frontier, a gate to hop from. The quest for knowledge and form defines us. What we find is another matter. Even if a bus is found on the moon, we laugh at our own lies, our extreme information. Thanks.
Next we have Pete Missing, who is visiting us for 3 days from New York.
Thank you very much. I just came here on a frequency, and I ended up working at the Camden Hotel Art Center, and I will have an exhibition there coming up. And I would like to make a quick quick announcement, and I approve this mess age. The fluoride in your water is a nightmare. England, Ireland, America, we are putting fluoride in our water. It calcimates your third eye, and it also rots your bones, your teeth, and causes cancer. We don't need this in the water. Monsanto is taking over your food here. Keep an eye on that one. It's worth fighting against. Once they privatize the seeds, we are finished. And they privatize the water. 1% of the water in the world is polluted. And so I think hope is a faraway thing. Man cannot cope with man. To make a spiritual connection with man is like throwing a stone across water. Without motives or physical manipulation, I want only to go into enlightened consciousness. Deep thought with my own image and likeness to know who I am. I want a partner in crime, the crime of love. Someone with a mutual interest who has no boundaries, no country, and the wall of confusion already came tumbling down. We haven't evolved past the singular cell into anything nearly interesting as it could be. Approaching is the end time of everything wrong around us. It's hard to watch man wallow in past thought, stuck in superficial emotions. If you try to go deep, they run away. I yearn to meet a person who understands the theory that this world is not it, and that past the physical plane is the mental plane and the astral plane, a place that's hard to reach, and the invisible world has so much more power. All knowledge comes from a giant core out in space, and until the right caliber of human comes into my space, I must struggle on the physical plane, which leaves me cold. Inspiration is my only offer. I am your butler at the edge of the abyss, forced into a corner because man cannot cope with man. From the book Resistance, I walk alone, a gray sky, a world that's torn. Watch the trees die and look above. The bees are gone. Love of nature too far gone. My last apple and grapes destroyed. I walk alone. Mankind destroys our water, our air, our soil polluted. Planes flying by with smoke and chemtrails. My contribution to humanity only a speck of dust. There is no turning back the hands of time. We created a hole to live in. The food makes me ill, so I starve another day. With lights going out, children hide, darkness creeps in. The sun going down, there's a war outside. So I planted a tree, but it does not grow. Saw a bird dying in my hand, it died in my hand, it died in my hand. I walk alone. Surrounded by invisible wars, I cannot see radiation or biochemical or bombs dropping from the air. our planet now an empty void. Its spirit descended a time ago. For years we'll tell if it starts over again. The damage we made can never be fixed. We are the last generation to watch it all go down. To have fun, we ignore it all and live in a glass ball, soon to turn into flames of yellow and gold. My world is only a burnt ember sprawled across the land. I didn't survive, I went out quick. See it now, sparkling afar, reach from the depths to try and fly. The light gets brighter, internal evolution, then disappears. You only get one chance. The human race stopped in their cars, and the guns go up. Vanishing politics, taking the planet with it. Turn away, money all over, melting into the ground. Ignore the white culture and corporate-run media. Stop buying from unfriendly nations. Vote with your euro. Reverse our backwards world. Rise up. In Youthville, everything is wrong. You got to feel alien. Clubs, bars, restaurants, why are we here? No one has to care. New York and ashes, we'll build from there. Bury it again. We know who won the battle. We disrupt another day. Fools run amok. Burn this city to the ground. Your fear is gone. We kill ourselves in the city of the dead. Occupy everywhere. Rise up.
I had planned on reading something different tonight, but when I was about 27 years of age, my interest in music was reignited by a band called Suede. If you don't know who they are or you're aware of their music, shame on you. Because next Wednesday night, Wednesday week, they will be given the Godlike Genius Award by the NME. And I don't get excited about news much these days, but I went, ooh, ooh, when I heard that. So this piece is, for those who don't know, I construct poems using song titles, and this is Street Life After Suede. When the rain falls quiet loud, a new generation feel electricity. Modern boys and graffiti women picnic by the motorway, and head music colours the asphalt world. They're so young, these lazy painted people, that the big time is only one hit to the body away. But black or blue, trash or cheap, every Monday morning comes, and the sounds of the street break down the wild ones and remind them that Saturday night may be the perfect day, but this Hollywood life makes beautiful ones pantomime horses.
I based this off someone that I met last year. She had a very beautiful name, Rowan. And Rowan's like based off a tree. And she kind of vanished off into nowhere. And I kind of like to think she was a witch. Not a good sort of witch, though. Sorry to say. So, much more complex than that. But anyway, based on her name, this is a poem. She is rotten. The great magnificent vanquisher of Mervlin foes. Like the demons that haunts your sister's body, she's swaying again and she scares you. Rowan. You remember the blood-red berries surrounded by serrated leaves. Those September beads of bitter were perfect for picking, and you would take fistfuls so your fist would stop her crying, stop her wailing, stop her swaying. The grot protruding from her big toe and her frightening, inhumane wails of a demon dragon that lives inside her. You remember the tricks of boiling the berries, digital dances, and the secret spells. The Persian wet you bake the jam is the most expensive ware inside this straw header mound which you call your home. The jelly bitter rowan jam mixed with ham is the only thing your sister eats. She then smiles that you can only see, and others just see the devil inside. Her face is blood rudely red, and she only eats with her hands. Like a dog, she tears the meat. And you would slowly pat her scruffy hair, the knots of her rusty mane. What would you do without your scarlet red sister? What would she do without you? The rowan is now black and rotten. September morning frost doesn't make it any better. No berries, just a tree structure built from ash. You, ca- can't even produce a tear. Your sister won't eat. Your sister won't sleep. She'll wail more nights again and again because your savior, your goddess, your guardian angel, for so long is dead. You just stare at the black branches. What happened in those months where you refused to check the road? Maybe the god needed protection too. You just molested its children for only your retarded sister's sake. Maybe you just have saved it. Maybe you should have saved it. Stopped it. Stopped the mysterious fire that happened all these months ago. Maybe the god's punishment of not thanking the tree, an absence of symbiosis. Suddenly, you feel somebody clutch your hand and you turn. Little sister squeezing you tightly as she pulls you down to her level. Put your hand where her heart beats wildly. We suddenly realize that no demon could ever live inside because she cares, but she speaks her rare words. I am so sorry, sister. Thank you very much.
This poem is really short, so short it doesn't even have a title. When there are questions circling round and round, answers like reasons found but do not fit, then I sit and make stillness the only important thing, and allow in the calm and the freshness of spring, with its small buds, its small answers to everything.
We want a closed restaurant, diffusing, spilling into puddles of each other across the plastered ceiling. You engulf a light bulb and its stress, creating chitoyens pointing at the stool soaked in gravity. Gradually, I recall then. Then, it soaked you. You too would sit, grounded, peering pursed lips into pools of caffeine vaccines. Your armor for the day, you'd say, smiling until finally alone. Letting milk drops plunge into the black, tunneling down, returning hastily. They marble their way to the surface, as if to greet you as a purpose. And you, smiling alone, selfishly keeping ephemeral kicks to yourself. You are milk when you breathe deeply in the bath. And you are a beautiful thing, of blues and greens and whites and reds soft. And I might be with you in the morning time. And the sun hits your face, makes my eyes hitting yours, and I could be theirs. And they are hemispheres, full to the brim, and I would live in them, in the empty half of them, diffusing. So this one I wrote like this time last week after the audio. It's kind of a love poem about words, yes. And it's called Last Night. Last night, approaching my abode, its threshold, confronting the front door, I pull my key by its tail from my pocket army. A hair bubble boldly follows, a stowaway escaping, the crumb corners of linen I'd held it hostage in. It fell and found its landing on mine, a limestone flagstone step. Black cast elastic loop, one sharp line endless, defined at the heel of my foot. I look not now to it but what it enclosed. I saw the moon. I saw the moon in the two-toned sliced rock I stood upon. Optically fed, the dark grey thumbnails became large-scale canyons, craters of glory. And I would stand where the colour meets the next, at the vantage point only imaginable. Attainable sights collate and merge with the unheard of. Paint spills onto photographs. I'm panting. Frantically, a pedantic streak in me brings me to poise. The fickle temperament exposes herself. I brood, her blanket over me now. Had I not spent the evening feeding on those fleshy words with you, the bauble would fall. And with no intent, emotionless, an accident I let happen. And now the fucking thing is wet, and if I rescue it, and if I let it wring my wrist, it'll dry and it'll draft me. So I leave it. I step on it with feet that would stand on the moon. If it could fit through the door, if lit differently, if evidently it was let, if fed. Her wool now traps enough heat to bathe me. I do like the aftertaste you have on the maps in me infused. What a lovely thing to have to lose. Thanks.
Max Creedon.
That'll be fast.
But yes, but it's the very fast because Alexis is here. I think she's still here. And she shares a neutral habit of loving a bit of sketching too. And this is probably my third little trilogy for the models, my pity for the models. And one of our girls is full with child at the moment. She's quite lovely and very free. So this is for her. Actually, also, we were at a workshop and this poet was beautiful. And she based her poem on a tattoo that she saw on a train. And I feel a bit mean, but it just seemed to come out when I was drawing. Similar. This is my answer to the her poem. It's called The Girl with the Ivy Tattoo. The girl with the ivy tattoo is perfectly perched, peachy blushed. She awaits her incumbent desserts. A trail embraces her pallor with vines. A lizard snaps at her elbow, defanged and unwound. The girl with the ivy tattoo is serene and waiting. She reclines on her side, fina cava, now weightless. Quarter turned, she rests in her place, babe decompressed, sighing smiles for her lips. The girl with the ivory tattoo has another, a rosy corsage adorns left shoulder girdle. How exotic this flower, impossible to pen. I am Mama Annika, I engender within. The girl with the ivory tattoo dreams chocolate fairies, with eyes and lips the colour of mystery. She whispers to her silent child, invisible, hidden to grow inside. The girl with the ivy tattoo will placate and milk soothe, skyward gazing, earnest, ingenue. She is with child to earn for her joy. Share my life, pretty babe. Welcome soon, sweet birth cry. So, that's it.
Right, I'll continue with, can you hear me like this?
Yes.
I am nothing but full of the translations I'm working on. I don't actually know, might I have done this when at O'Vale before. It's not the same as the last time I was here, that's for sure. It's one of the poems in a book that I'm translating by a German poet who fell in World War I in 1915, in September. And it's his love poems that appeared in 1915 as well. And this is one of the pieces. Okay. Erfüllung. Meine Sporen frechzen deine Spitzen. Bläulich kichern die Äderchen fort. In Sicherheit, höhnisch im schimmrigen Wein. Bebige Hügel wiegen Verlangen. Köpfchen, Rosen empor und steilen Gewehr. Die Lippe zerfrisst sich. Die Lippe zerfrisst sich. Golden ringen Würger hinunter und schnüren den Hals zu.
Sorry about that. My brain. Okay.
Golden ringen Würger hinunter und schnüren den Hals zu. Nach meinen Fingern tastet dein Blut und siedet den Kampf. Die Seelen ringen und kollern abseit. Hoch schlagen die Röcke den Blick auf. Gold, hell, rot, rot, weich, rot. Flamme zischt in das Hirn und sticht mir das Schaum aus. Sinken, sinken, schweben
und sinken. Schwingen im Sturme, im Sturm, im Schrei krollen Meer. Ziegelrot über uns segnet der Tod, sehender Tod.
Right. This is very abstract stuff. The guy was an expressionist, an avant-garde writer, and he really worked language to the bone and bent it and experimented with it. I'm trying to get the inner experience across that he tried to capture. So I'm not focusing on the quirkiness, and I'm hoping that I succeed. Let me know if I do in this one. And forgive my brain, please, if I forget again.
Fulfillment. My spurs, lip tease your tips. Bluish capillaries giggle forth, smirking in safety, in shimmery smooth. Quivery hills wave desire. Budlets rosin up and steep a promise. Lips devour themselves. Golden ringers slither downwards and string the throat tight. For my fingers fumbles your blood and seethes the romp. Souls wrestle and roll aside. Skirts cast the eye up high. Gold light red, red soft red, flame zoshes the brain and stabs out my gaze. Sinking, sinking, floating and sinking, swinging storm-like in the storm, in the scream-rolling sea. Clinker red above us blesses death.
His name is August Stamm. Just so you know, August Stamm.
Thank you. Can we get Brian Crotty, please?
Thank you. This is about a homeless woman I observed in 2014 in Patrick Street. She was an elderly woman, and I observed her looking for a spot to sleep. And it's called Patrick Street 2015. Shuffling within down Patrick Street, suitcase on tow, her world within. Pulling on wheels, her whole life's work, cold and alone, down on her luck. Big brown belt tied round her case, smaller belt around her waist. Could be anybody's mum. Maybe she's on vacation, just strolling to the station, then flying to the sun, or so I'd like to think. But to my shame, and maybe blame, she's searching for some place to rest. I'm going home, waiting for a bus. She finds a spot and settles down, not making any fuss. People pass, some stop and stare, just to remind her she's homeless. As if she doesn't know, like me, they look and carry on, their family, their home. Thank you.
Thanks well. New year, new hope. I fell asleep at 25 to midnight on the 31st of December, 1999. I was doing fine. 6 years old, sleeping tight. But did I miss something? I think that I might. Do tell to me this. Did Y2K hit? Cause that's easier to swallow than spit. And take the alternative. That we have taught our kids how to find self-destruct on their own. And push buttons to push buttons to push buttons to push buttons to push buttons. Maybe it's already over, and we're just here for closure. Voyeurs in a dreamscape, detectives of our fate. Surely that is simpler to believe than the mandate we receive. Define so to differentiate, fear the stranger at the gate and with camera lens perpetuate. Show them no love, as love is free, and therefore has no value in our system. And what wisdom to lighten such a weight. All that I love is taxing, but my hate is on the make. And so I went and made a fortune from my least attractive trait. My heart starves for warmth, for there's hot food on my plate, and I care not where it comes from, nor its altered genetic state. For us good captains of nature, your hunger is our bait. And listen to the teachings of the prophet. The gods of enterprise have their wrath, you just try and stop it. It's easier to enjoy it, said the rapist to his queen. I came to bring you pleasure, your refusal made me mean. Is that what we should tell them? That the excuse we should give? That those of your shade and standing are in due a right to live? And send out our status to every starving shore, and bring home our violent message to those sleeping in the doorway, and should they call upon yours, say that you have nothing to give them, for the love you have to offer has no value in our system. It's too powerful to quantify, and so they've taught you how to lie, in response to cries of help me, as it strikes fear amongst the wealthy. But you have the strength to write the fallen to their feet. You have a laugh to put in the mouths that you meet. You can change the texture of their every waking hour. You are rich in love and you have that power. And though you have suffered seasons and seasons of grief, stand squarely in the face of your lauded virtue's thief. For how fickle is belief and how beautiful the brief. I remember a time, think it was 1999, at the 31st of December, at a 5 to midnight. And we were scared of slumber, and the world was in a fright. And so we raised a glass to the beauty of existence, for the lives of all we loved were to end in a moment. Can you recall how you felt about it all? The adventures of the pale blue ball ended in the passing of an instant. Imagine that it didn't.
Thank you.
Let's get it right. This has a sort of dedication. I went to Inkworth in Sussex, country house, a long time ago, with some English friends to whom I consider this dedicated. Death of a Marquess, the Daily Telegraph reports, 1999. Downwind of a prominent cigarette and argon. Nobility in trench coat versus older values. That was the photograph of the obituary page of the Telegraph, 1999. 1989. On the news page is another image. The greatcoat's fur collar is a large wreath. One might say in anticipation of the event, death of the Marquis. At Ickworth with friends, years ago, we relived the breakfast to evening life of the aristocracy. Under the great dome, we moved to a morning room, past table laden with heavy silver, to study, magnificent library, encountered the busts of Fox and Pitt, Canning and Lord Liverpool in the drawing room. But the late, the seventh Marquess, hock deep in drugs, preferred notoriety, eschewed politics.
Thanks, Charles. Ben Kingston, please.
It's called fever sweat. Fever in the bathroom, stall after stall, each one as nasty as the next. Reminding to flush, rewind and wash and croak. The feet at the toilet seat, face swollen, windpipe clogged with chunks. Face, red cheeks, veiny temples, cool fever sweat. Graffiti prostitute wisdom, my hand misses the door, crack. My head splits against the floor. Thank you. I'm after letting him know. Offers me his umbrella, I'm walking home, thanks anyway, I say. He doesn't seem that surprised. I shouldn't have worried, he reminds me. It's raining pretty heavy. I hope you don't hate me, I say. He was straight. I cared so much, but never let on. My arms shook as I spoke. I like you, I said.
That brings us to the end of our night, almost. A big thank you to Aaron and Caleb again. Next week's guest is Martin Dyer from Swinford County Mayo. Again, if you liked your creations for the 5-word challenge, submissions at obale.ie. Cork Spring Poetry Festival begins this Wednesday and the catalogues are there on your tables. Next Monday before O'Bale from 6 to 8pm at UCC, there's a reading by Zadie Smith and Nick Laird, and again, Camden on the 18th. If you'd like to read, I think to send Emily a message on emily@dfj@gmail.com. I think that's correct. If not, ask her yourself and she'll correct you. Peter. She'll put you on to Peter. So, I'm going to leave you with this. Somebody calling me? No? Okay. Just the main line about our friends in Irish Rail, to tell you of an anomaly when you let the train take the strain. For if I were to mark their sums, 'twould have to be a fail. Check yourself and click the fares, but prepare for your disdain. For reasons I can't figure, the return fare seems more fair. Now it's probably all valid, no reasons to claim evil, but judging by the price of 13 quid would get you at Kildare, does it come back on green diesel? You might see, you see, a single gets you to Dublin, and it costs you 65. However, if you want to get back, 78 is the total. A difference of 13 quid doesn't balance the sides, as someone would track through on a night out at your local. Is it all uphill to Dublin, full steam on the track? Then it's so much cheaper as it coasts all the way back. Do they presume you'll have a filter of all the Dublin follies? Then you'll catch your last train back, which doesn't have a trolley, and the bar is closed, surrounded by all of its cages. Maybe that's a saving, 52 in wages. I suppose there is a logic there, but still it doesn't half great. But it's no surprise for an organisation where punctuality means less than 10 minutes late.